Well, I wonder if we should try and make a start. Welcome, everybody. And Christina, can you give us a roll call of who's present and who's apologised, please?
Sure. On the call, we have Nigel Roberts, Keith Davidson, Bart Boswinkle, Martin Boyle, Bernie Turcotte, Kim Davis, Christy Spain, Patricia Poblete, Oscar Robles, and Christina Nordstrom. And apologies we have from Paulus Nyrenda, Vikem Pisane, Eberhard Lisse, and Susanne Sen.
Thank you. Are any further apologies received? No. If not, I'll take it that the meeting agrees with that being the attendee list and apologies. Confirmation of the agenda, I've seen nothing.
Keith, can you hear me?
Yep.
Sorry, I was having trouble getting... I seem to have gone on mute and hadn't realised that. It's Nigel here. I've got something to... very interesting to add regarding Eberhard's apology, if I may.
Sure.
Eberhard asked me to tell you that he couldn't make it for a very interesting reason. He had to travel to South Sudan at very short notice because the Commonwealth Association and the government of South Sudan have awarded him the Internet Pioneer Award in Africa.
Oh, goodness me.
And he's gone to collect it.
Yeah, about that. I got an email from him saying that he was in Addis Ababa and in a hotel and very tired. So probably
the ceremony was yesterday, and he's on his way back to Namibia, apparently.
Excellent. Oh, well, shall we record our congratulations to Eberhard?
I think that would be most appropriate.
Okay, and I'll write him a note on behalf of the working group, unless anyone objects.
Keith, can I just also add that I think that we can count Young Em Lee as an apology. She apologized because she thought the meeting had already been held, and I asked if I should put her down, but she has replied, but
yep.
She might want us to put her down as an apology for this call.
Okay, yep, let's do that. Okay, confirmation of the agenda. I've heard nothing to the contrary from the agenda I circulated to the list. So unless anyone has anything to add or delete, can we take it as read? Thank you. And we also have the item 3 on the agenda, the confirmation of the record of the last meeting. It's a very brief record. I'm not sure if it's... Bernie, do you want to walk us quickly through it and just to note if there's any errors or omissions?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Christina, I think I need to be presenter.
Of course. I'm sorry.
As Keith has said, thank you very much. As Keith has said, very succinct, we do keep the full recording of the meetings, so I figure it's best to keep these things straightforward and simple. So, as per my usual style on these things, we've got attendance, confirmation of agenda, confirmation of the meeting report, final report on delegation, and the document will be posted to the list by the chair asking for any objections. That was for the delegation. Redelegation with consent. Discussion of the name of the report. We changed that. I think the latest version reflects that. Various editorial comments. I think those were included. Request to have cases appear only once. I went through the delegation, redelegation, and complex redelegation, barring the changes in names, and made sure that was the case. And hopefully this can get approved at this meeting. There's a report for Cartagena, many editorial comments, general format and direction was okayed, and we have produced a new version which has been distributed. The complex redelegations, as it was called at that meeting, many editorial comments, discussion of the name of the report, long discussion on the IQ case, and I published to the smaller group some new text, which is in the new version of that report, and Eberhardt replied that he could live with that, which is the IQ text in the current version that's going around with the new name. And we have the note that the chair confirmed that his preference was not to rush to complete this report for Cartagena. And we have confirmation of the future meetings. And that's about it. I'll take questions, comments, or corrections. Over to you, sir.
Thanks, Benny. I think, in actual fact, the working group agreed with my observation that the complex re-delegation paper should be held over till after Cartagena. So I don't think it was just my sole assertion.
Keith?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. Although I don't see any harm whatsoever during the ICANN meeting of circulating the draft as it has reached, if it's marked draft.
I think I'd prefer to have had a really clean read of it through a working group call and a sort of a final approval. But let's see how we go on today's call and make the decision at the end of the call. Personally, I'm still not 100% relaxed about that document. I'd prefer a week, but let's see how we get on today. Okay, no other comments or observations regarding the meeting reports? If not, I think the delegations report, item 4 on the agenda, is just here as a formality, and rather than going through the document, I think there were only a couple of editorial tweaks to it since last week. There's nothing changed in terms of intent or significance. So really just a request for anyone to comment prior to giving our final approval for this document. If there's no comments, can we consider the delegations report approved?
Yes.
I'll take silence as assent. Thank you very much. Okay, moving on to item 5, the friendly redelegation report. That would be report number 3, Christina. Could we have that loaded? And Bernie, do you want to walk us through the changes to this document?
Yes, sir. I guess there are two sets of changes. Well, three. The first one, the document's been renamed. So I think as per agreement last week, it's now called the Report on the Redelegation of CCTLDs with Consent of the Incumbent Operator. The second change was, as we had discussed and I mentioned in the meeting report, cases only appear once. So some of them were moved around, removed, this or that, but in my opinion, it doesn't really change the intent of the report, and so it just makes everything cleaner, and I had to agree with that comment. The third thing, I think, which I talked about last week was really working some more on the notion of community support for redelegation and making sure we have those parts highlighted and we have those parts analyzed. And that's about it. The cases, as I say, there have been some small updates. Libya is not up there. Colombia only appears once, and probably what I'm going to do now is probably just go through it very quickly so we're all okay with the big lines of this, if that's okay with you, sir. I'll do like Keith, and I'll take silence as assent. The first part in 1.1 is just the basic documents, so I'm not going to go over that. We go to 1.2, which is the cases. The first case is the .kz redelegation. That's where we stop having sponsorship agreements being required. The .gd redelegation. Again, lack of community support. .bb redelegation. Some questions about technical capacity and community support. The .ae redelegation, lack of community support, and the statement by Jean-Jacques Subrenat of the board that was appended to the minutes regarding his concern about this. The .by redelegation, again, there is a note of community support, but there is sort of a hanging question mark on that one. The .ng redelegation, with no record of the board discussion, and the .co redelegation, which is recorded as uncontested in the INA report. However, there are no minutes of the board discussion on this, and it would be quite surprising if there were none. So that's a list of our cases, and as usual, I'll stop here and I'll take questions or comments. Okay, on the analysis, section 2.1 is the standard analysis, RFC 1591, News Memo 1, ICP 1, YAC Principles 2005, Understanding Delegation Redelegation Procedures from IANA, and looking at the fact that the requirement for government and local internet community support, the board decision to require sponsorship agreements, we don't need to go into detail with that, no longer allowing individuals to be delegees, and the approval of IDNCCTLDs in April 2010 of this year, where the board is asking the CCNSO to clarify this whole notion of community support. Section 2.2 looks at the cases and from an analysis point of view. .kz, basically, it's quite clear that the board's not going to be requiring it anymore, but it stops short of actually doing that. And the IANA website changed dramatically without any notice to match up to that. .gd redelegation, again, community support criteria. .bb, there's sort of a question mark all around the technical qualifications. .ae, community support. .by is the information contained in discussion regarding redelegation was held in a private session. Technically, that's not allowed by the bylaws. .ng redelegation, no recording of board discussion, if there was any, goes against current practice. .co redelegation, embedded in there is technically a policy change which did not go through the CCNSO. And given that this is probably one of the longest IANA reports on record, it would be quite surprising that there was no board discussion of this case. However, there are no minutes. The minutes only show approval for the decision. And that completes the analysis section. I'll be glad to take questions or comments. Oops, I thought I heard a breath. Okay, three issues. This is where, as of last week, we adjusted things. I think we've gotten our stride a bit about some of our issues, and we tried to make this sort of consistent through the documents. fair and consistent application of bylaws applying to minutes of board meetings. Obviously, the documentation shows a couple of gaping blanks there without any explanation. And I guess it's fair to say also that the chair of the working group wrote to the chair of the board about this prior to the Brussels meeting, and we're still waiting on an answer for that, unless there has been something that I'm not aware of, Keith?
Nothing that I'm not aware of either.
Okay. So that one, from this point, just really bears noticing, because it sort of stinks a bit. Failure to consistently follow established policy development process and procedures prior to the CCNSO, sponsorship agreements no longer allowing individuals after the creation of the CCNSO, approval of the KZ redelegation no longer requiring sponsorship agreements, and the IANA report on the redelegation of CO states the board will now consider security and stability in the internet making delegation decisions and redelegation decisions. Lack of predictability in the application of current rules. Access to the zone file is still documented in ICP-1, but hasn't been applied for years. Sponsorship agreements are still on the books as a formal rule approved by the board, no longer applied. Government support and local internet community support. Of course, we went from a situation where government support was desirable and local internet community support was required to what seems to be today a fairly clearly documented situation where government support is required and local community support is a nice to have. And this, of course, is not mirrored in the policies or rules that are in effect, which basically, if you take the sum of them, say you need clear support from both. If you consider News Memo 1 and its inclusion into ICP-1. Applicability of ICP-1 is the standard thing. It was just dumped on the CC community and did not enjoy the support that RSC 1591 did get. And we pointed that out in the previous document that basically failed to meet the requirements of changing policies. Also, I think it's quite clearly made in the unfriendly delegation report that although this report, ICP-1, that is, starts off by saying there are no changes, it's just rather blatant that there are some key changes in there. 3.5, no publicly documented process or procedure for updating IANA processes and procedures that apply to CCTLDs. The IANA reports are edited versions of reports provided by IANA to the board. We don't know what gets cut or how or who approves.
Just before you leave that point, I noticed a typo there. 3.5, up one more piece there, please, Jim. And 3.5, the second sentence, documentation has also demonstrated.
Got it. I'll fix that one. The IANA reports that are published on delegations and redelegations are also constantly changing in format and content without any kind of notice. Public IANA reports are regularly used to communicate significant changes in practices or procedures. And in the past, IANA has had significant delays, sometimes up to a year, in posting public IANA report for a given decision. Although this is not currently the case, there are no public commitment processes or procedures or practices dealing with this to assure us that this shouldn't happen in the future. So that's definitely an area to work on. Current manager approving a redelegation request, that's the consent. In 3.6, we're looking at the various language that evolved over the years from RFC 1591, ICP-1, understanding the delegation redelegation procedure, which is the documentation by IANA on its site, which I believe dates from 2007, and basically just saying that this is all done by an email, and is this enough? Significantly interested parties, and we start going into basically trying to understand community support, and I think we come to the issue that there are issues around that in agreement with the board, and that's going to have to get cleaned up. And that's about it for the issues in Section 3. And Section 4 is the standard recommendation, which was approved last week and is essentially the same recommendation as in the delegation report, except hopefully we've changed delegation to redelegation where it applies in this document. And that's my run-through, sir. Over to you.
Thanks very much, Bernie. And just noting during that discussion, both YARP and Young M joined the call.
Catherine Reynolds also joined the call.
Oh, hi, Catherine. Okay, could we note the record accordingly, please, Christina?
Yes, noted.
Thank you. And now I'll just open up for any comments or discussion on the document as it stands. Nothing. Can we therefore give this document our final approval, subject to the correction of the typo and any other minor editing grammatical changes? I'll take silence as assent. Thank you all very much. That's great. Okay, can we move on to the third progress report, item 6 on the agenda? And I just noticed that we have a slight inconsistency in the naming of the documents between the third progress report and the actual redelegation document names, so we'll fix that. But do you want to talk us through this document? And Christina, do you want to enable Bart as a presenter?
Yes, please. Okay, I should be able to. Let me see where I am. Yes, here I am. So you see there is a summary of the recommendations. It's the same recommendations from the three documents. The titles of the report itself will be updated because and the section on the friendly redelegations will be updated as well to reflect the same type of reporting on the issues. What we've done is we've changed the introduction and made it aligned it with previous reports and taking into account the comments from the previous call. So purpose scope is similar. This bit is still similar process. We've trimmed down the last bit, so that's section or this paragraph, the final paragraph of this subsection and this subsection, because they refer to the activity since September 2010 and the current status. The description of the activities of the working group itself has been updated, and activities at the Cartagena meeting. I think they speak for themselves as well. Next step after Cartagena speak for themselves as well. And the Section 3, Section 4 and 5 are issues in draft of recommendations relating to the retirement of CCTLDs. This is the issues, the way they are described here is more in a written text, so not with the numbering. The substance is identical to the reports themselves. The recommendations are identical to the recommendations in the reports. The Section 4 issues and draft recommendations relating to delegation of CCTLD issues are again identical, only presented in another format. Recommendations are identical, and the only thing is, so this is where you see the real recommendations are highlighted, and these recommendations are included in the summary as well, so the executive summary. And Section 5, this one needs to be renamed to reflect the title, and before publishing, I suggest that, the numbering in this and the presentation of the issues in this section will be aligned with the presentations of issues in the previous two sections. Recommendations are, scroll down. Recommendations are again presented in a similar format, so, and that numbering needs to be adjusted again to this section, and that's about the end of the updated version of the third progress report.
Thanks, Bart. Of course, this report is assuming that we will or that we would approve the friendly redelegation report, which we now have, and also assumes that we won't approve the hostile redelegation report, which we may get to very shortly. But are there any comments, anything missing, anything needs deletion? Is everyone happy that this be presented as the progress report? I'll take silence as assent.
Maybe just one thing is what we'll include in this section is that the three reports will be published, at least the three reports, so that's the retirement delegations and friendly redelegations, and we'll include a reference to the sites or to the email addresses where comments can be submitted on these three reports, and there will be three email addresses for that.
Sure. Thanks, Bert. So no comments, no observations. Everyone's quite relaxed. I'll take silence as assent. Thank you very much. We'll use this report and amend for the small adjustments of email addresses, etc.
And to reflect the latest version of the this bit about the numbering and the and the title.
Yep. Okay, thank you all. We're making incredibly useful progress today. Can we move on to the, I'll use the word on this call, but never in public, the hostile redelegation report as circulated by Bernie yesterday. Could we have that on screen, please, Christina? And Bat, do you want to talk us through this and probably highlighting particularly the areas of...
I think you meant Bernie.
Bernie. And particularly highlighting the areas of dissent and discussion from last week. Thanks, Bernie.
Sure. Thank you. So we have a new name here also. I believe that was generally agreed. It is now called Report on the Redelegation of CCTLDs where the incumbent operator does not consent. We have a small definition here because we try and split up the cases of redelegation where the incumbent operator has not consented to and has contested the transfer of the CCTLD, and cases where there is no consent but there is no contestation either. And here we go. Section 1, again, mirrors Section 1 from the other reports, so there is some consistency there. Although from report to report, we will highlight different sections as they are applicable to that given report. In RFC 1591, which is included in Annex A, we've got things that are dealing with hostile redelegations. News Memo 1, same thing. ICP 1, we've got the relevant texts. The GAC principles, again, things dealing with unapproved redelegations. Understanding the delegation-redelegation process from IANA. And then, bad formatting. I'm not sure if that's mine or when it got transferred over, but anyway, that needs to be fixed. 1.2, we'll be looking at cases of redelegation where the incumbent operator has not consented to and has contested the transfer. Sorry for the non-English speakers for consented and contested in the same sentence. Even for me, given I am dyslexic, I find it confusing. So do bear, I think everyone in the business understands it. 1.2.1, the .au redelegation, Robert Ells did object to it and never approved it, although there is a note that it's approved because he didn't reply. The .ke redelegation, Kenya, was objected to, and the information from the IANA report is interesting. Obviously, I can put in a lot of work on this one, and it was a forced redelegation, as was Somalia, which was one of those really god-awful cases. 1.3 looks at inferred processes, practices, and procedures, redelegations where the incumbent operator has not consented to the transfer but has not contested. The .uz redelegation, basically the admin contact was no longer operational when it got done. So that brings up the whole question about how do we approve the transfer, the redelegation of the CCTLD if there's no admin contact, there's no procedures. Anyways, we'll talk about that under issues. The .ky redelegation for the Cayman Islands, the administrative contact upon learning that the government had passed legislation simply handed in his resignation. The .md redelegation, which was a long, sad case where the operation of the domain was for all practical purposes farmed out to a company that went bankrupt and then was at the center of a huge dispute where people were saying that the CCTLD was an asset. Finally, a U.S. court sort of said, please return this to Moldova, and IANA complied, so that was the right thing. The Libyan redelegation, 2 points. There's no such thing as a provisional redelegation prior to the .ly, nor since. So that got sort of done on the fly. And the second thing is, technically, there are no recording of the minutes of discussing this case, although the board decision has a lot of whereases. The third point on the .ly is this was done without an IANA report. So the thing that we have to keep in mind with LY is there were two passes in the same year. There was the provisional redelegation where there's no real minutes of the discussion, there's no IANA report, and we have a provisional redelegation, whatever that means, because it's not documented. And then later in October, I believe, we've got a formal standard redelegation process with the IANA report and the board discussions being recorded and everything. Obviously, if you try and read between the lines, there was some significant problems with the operation of the LY domain, but the whole thing is a little muddied up. And then our favorite case, the Iraq redelegation, July 2005. Basically, where the IANA report makes a big point that people were convicted of terrorism and were in jail, and obviously the redelegation went ahead without the approval of the supporting organization. CX redelegation, the admin and tech contact just didn't exist anymore, which brings up the whole point of how often does IANA really follow up on these things if the only time it learns that an admin and technical contact are no longer operating in that function and have not for several years. And that completes the case studies in section one, and I'll be glad to take questions or comments. As I said at the beginning of the call, the new text for Iraq, that's in section two, so we haven't really covered that. The text for Iraq in section one has not really changed, and I don't think there was a big argument about changing it in section one either.
Bernie? Is it?
Yep.
Are there any cases where a proposed resolution has come to a board meeting about the redelegation and the board has not approved it?
I'm unaware of that.
So if any redelegations requested are denied, they are in fact denied by the staff, not by the board, right?
There is no documentation, so I can't comment on that.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting question, Patricio, and one that I don't know if Kim would want to comment on that, or in fact it might be putting Kim on the spot, but my feeling is that if there's no public knowledge of a redelegation request and it's likely to be unsuccessful, or it is unsuccessful, then there's unlikely to be any public commentary on that at all.
I'm happy to comment on it if you like.
Yeah.
Yes, please, Kim. And then I note Chris has got his hand up.
Firstly, sorry, I'm not on Adobe Connect, so I can't participate that way. I would say that a number of redelegations or delegations are rejected at the staff level because they're clearly defective and have no prospect whatsoever of approval by the board, i.e., you know, varying from frivolous requests to those that are very half-baked. There are some that go to the board that do not get approved, but they don't go so far as to be rejected. Usually what's happened, and it's been a very, very few cases, one or two in my time at ICANN, it's gone to the board. The board has noted deficiencies they wanted addressed. They haven't voted no on the request, but they've returned it back to the applicant for further work. So as staff, we've taken the concerns the board has expressed back to the applicant and asked the applicant if they could address the concerns, and then we'll resubmit it to the board. I think in one of the cases it did go back to the board and was ultimately successful, and in the other case those defects couldn't be remedied and the applicant decided not to proceed. So I think it's correct the board never actually says no. I think no implies that the decision is final. I think you're either going to see an approval or you're going to see the board identifies areas of concern and always gives the applicant the opportunity to address them or remedy them, depending on the case.
Patricio, again.
Yeah.
So when the board asks for more information or for a reformulation, those actions by the board, are they documented in minutes or resolutions or anything, or they're just not documented at all?
I think it's correct that they're not documented publicly. Our general operating principle is applications that are not successful are kept in confidence. We receive a lot of delegation applications, and definitely we publish reports on those that are successful, but those that are unsuccessful, we generally don't publish any information on. That's not to say the applicants themselves aren't free to publish whatever they wish, but ICANN doesn't publish information on unsuccessful applications.
Patricio, this is Bernie. Maybe just to add on to that, there is one case where technically a redelegation request gets refused. It's when there are competing redelegation requests for a domain, and we've seen that in a few cases in the documentation, and of course there can only be one that is approved. So in those cases that is sort of intrinsically documented.
I think in those cases that's generally referred back to the local internet community to come up with a single preference for their redelegation or the designated manager.
Yeah, well, I don't have a firm opinion either way, but I would think that a question that we could ask ourselves is if in those cases the transparency requirements are being fully met, and if it's possible to verify that the procedures are being followed correctly if there is no documentation and no public information.
Yeah, and that's a very, very good point, Patricio. I think we should think about that a little bit further. It's, I guess the difficulty is the potential embarrassment to a redelegation request there that is unsuccessful on some grounds. And I guess the board would probably reflect on the basis that the status quo is remaining, that there's no benefit to publishing the details. But
Keith, it's Chris. Can I had all the point I was going to make was covered, and I was just about to sort of shut up. But it just occurs to me that I mean, you're right to some extent, but it's a little difficult to imagine how it would be possible to put forward a redelegation application that came even close to meeting the current requirements without some form of publicity, because how else do you gauge community support? The concept that you would be able, that no one would know what was going on, or that it would not have been discussed, doesn't fit with the policy. It has to have been, otherwise no one knows about it.
Okay.
Whereby we note the difference between policy and practice in cases and ask the question relevant to that.
Yeah, I'm not saying that people publicly will say, oh, Kim, or, you know, not Kim personally, but Kim Iana has told us to do the following things. That's a different issue. But the actual the fact that it is being done, the fact that it is being considered, the fact that, you know, ISOC-AU has decided to lobby the government to take over .au can't, by definition, within the, any ICANN process, be secret.
You know, I just add a couple of points. One is that the majority of those that are deficient fail at the staff level. So that we try not to waste the board's time unless it's really a close call and staff can't make a clear distinction. But that's certainly the rarity. You know, the other case is some of the requests are delicate. You know, we were dealing with one for a couple of years where, you know, the government kept throwing the CCTLD operator in jail. Well, at least that's what was reported to us. And, you know, so we didn't want to, you know, unnecessarily exacerbate the situation. And again, I'll just emphasize these situations are relatively rare. So by far the most are either ultimately successful or it's clear right from the beginning that that there's no real prospect that they're going to be successful. These middle ground ones are very rare.
Okay, thanks. There's still probably enough of an issue or concern there to have a bit more thinking about this. I think we already quite clearly state throughout the documents that the board's commitment to accountability and transparency is a bit inadequate. So whether we need to cover this or not, I'm not sure. But you know, it seems to be a reasonably significant point. Thanks, Patricia. Someone else was about to speak. No? Okay. Moving along then, Bernie.
Thank you, sir. Analysis of documentation identified in Section 1. 2.1 is the pretty standard stuff on RFC 1591 on where we talk about the clauses for redelegation without manager approval. Some terms are sort of very broad and could use some tightening up, and we are talking about RFC 1591 here. And again, the same thing for 3.5, which is satisfactory job of operating the DNS. Obviously, it says that IANA can take away the domain if you fail that, but what does that mean is unclear. News Memo 1 basically is the document that added the requirement for government support, which then got mapped into ICP-1. And ICP-1, under this one, we've got a bit of a problem on the changes from RFC 1591. If you go back and look at the general terms whereby RFC 1591 says that they can generally take your domain away from the CCTLD operator if he has significantly misbehaved, and what we've got in ICP-1 is the significantly misbehaved clause all of a sudden disappeared. So what we've got is basically a statement in ICP-1 that says basically we can take your domain away if we think we need to, which hasn't really been invoked, but it's there. And it was done very craftily because what we find in Section F, which is the section following this one we've just been talking about, is revocation of CCTLD delegation in cases where there is misconduct. So all of a sudden, we've got misconduct. So if you're reading these things rather quickly, you're saying, oh, okay, the misconduct thing is there. But by moving it away from the section that it was in, basically what you're saying is there's absolutely no framework for requiring, there's no requirement to sort of have a framework on which you're going to base the decision. I'm not saying this is what IANA does, but I'm saying if you look at ICP-1, by taking away the significantly misbehaved part from the previous clause versus RFC 1591, you're leaving it completely open, which doesn't make sense and seems to be just a little bit questionable to all of a sudden in the section right below to shove in misconduct to make it look like it was still there. Also, section F adds in or the violation of the policy set forth in this document and RFC 1591 or persistent recurring problems with the proper operation of the domain. So clearly, violation of the policy set forth in this document and RFC 1591 becomes the basis for revoking the delegation of the domain. So quite significant changes, and I think those are brought up under the issues. GAC principles, the standard stuff. Under the IANA procedures, the information on redelegations, there's really no information on unconsented or contested redelegations. It's just, there's just no information on how you deal with those things. Inferred processes, cases of redelegation where the incumbent operator is not consented and has contested. The .au case, considering a failure to reply by an active CCTLD manager as an approval for a redelegation, is an administrative, is inadequate and an issue. There's no policy or rule that allow one to do that. It's sort of an administrative trick, which for something this serious, I think is questionable. The .ke redelegation was interesting if you start tearing it apart down to its foundations, where we have the statement, in the case of .ke, the current administrative contact has not agreed, so we're clear on that. That's what's said in the IANA report. So what's the justification for an unapproved redelegation of the CCTLD? And we find in the IANA report that under IANA policy, CCTLD redelegation requests are measured primarily by two yardsticks, technical competence and the views of the local internet community, which is a bit of a shock because this comes out of nowhere and doesn't really map into anything in RFC 1591 or ICP-1. Meaning that, you know, if the local internet community doesn't like you anymore, then we can redelegate your domain. And certainly under ICP-1, you can do that given the discussions we just had. So then we go through taking it apart and seeing where those things fit in versus unapproved redelegations. And it's not a comfortable fit. Obviously, the way this thing was brought out, and I don't want to go through word by word here, but if you are interested in the case, I would invite you to read the analysis that is in the document. But it just, it's really at odd angles trying to fit this the way it's presented, so there are definitely issues there. The .so redelegation from February 2009, clearly an unapproved redelegation. Documentation indicates it was impossible to contact the administrative contact. Again, what's the policy when something, when you can't contact the administrative contact or the operator of the domain? The default policy seems that to be that IANA does what it wants. And, you know, we have to figure out, is are we comfortable with that? And let's be clear, I mean, that domain was a problem domain and it probably needed to be redelegated. But again, you know, what I'm saying is I'm not critiquing the end result. and it probably something that needed to be done. But when you're trying to analyze these things versus the rules that are in place, you need a really big shoehorn once in a while to make these things fit. So we certainly got issues here. No contest, not contested, unapproved, but not contested, .uz. Again, it's the case, what happens, how can, you know, the IANA report sort of says the admin contact was no longer the admin contact. That's all it says. We don't know how, why. There's no process or procedures or documentation that says when IANA can declare that an administrative contact is no longer an effective administrative contact. And that's an issue that comes up time and again. The .ky redelegation, there's clear documentation that the admin contact removed himself. But again, what do you do when that happens? The .md redelegation, complex situation. I don't see any big issues. It was just a really ugly, ugly case. The .ly provisional redelegation we've talked about in section 1.3. I don't need to go over it. There were a lot of things on that thing. This is the new text now in 2.3.5 on the IQ redelegation, and I'll just catch my breath here before we go into this. And we're in the home stretch now. Probably another 10 minutes we'll be through this unless there are questions or comments or we need to fix things. The IANA report is unclear on the reasons for approving this redelegation. There were a lot of things wrong with this domain, but there's nothing that's put forward as the thing. It seems to be just a general hodgepodge of things that were wrong, and therefore we've redelegated the domain. The domain was delegated to a U.S.-based company with administrative and technical contact also based in the U.S., which sort of doesn't sync up with the requirements for delegation, so we sort of point that out. The IANA report fails to mention if IANA tried to contact the incumbent regarding the redelegation request. All the information is about the technical contact that's in jail. From the documentation, what we seem to be able to find is the delegee or the sponsoring organization was found guilty of all sorts of crimes and terrorism, and one can assume that it would be very hard to contact a company that has been convicted on terrorism charges, I would imagine. But the point is, there was a delegee. As far as we know, it was still the delegee. There's a redelegation request, and there's no mention if we tried to contact them. So obviously not an ideal situation, obviously difficult, but obviously unclear why we didn't document this. The IANA report seems to focus on the conviction of Infocom and the technical contact by U.S. court. It's unclear how IANA came by this information or how it confirmed it. It just states it. Was this part of the information supplied as the redelegation request? It's unclear if the convictions were in any way related to the operation of the CCTLD and therefore relevant to the IANA report and the redelegation request. The IANA report fails to make any links between the convictions and the operation of the domain. The convictions were not related to the operation of the CCTLD. Why were they included in the IANA report? Given the IANA reports only focus on relevant information as history. I mean, we don't find irrelevant facts in IANA reports. It's unclear if the IANA report was attempting to focus on imprisonment or the conviction in imprisonment. Jurisdiction. The report clearly points out that this was a conviction by a U.S. court and imprisonment in the U.S. Would make a difference if it's another jurisdiction. And those are some big questions. Proper operation of the domain. Obviously, there were significant problems with that. That's documented. But the IANA report fails to mention this improper operation of the main was a factor in its decision to redelegate. And, you know, basically, given the information that's provided in the IANA report, this thing seemed to have been a slam dunk on the proper operation of the domain. This report could have been 2 pages long, you know, they didn't operate the domain, they couldn't take care of it, and we really delegated, but we've got this long saga about imprisonments and crimes. Community support, there's absolutely no mention of community support in this redelegation. So basically, a lot of things come out of this. IANA reports need to clearly and consistently document the status of its contacts with the incumbent in any redelegation. IANA reports need to clearly and consistently document community support. IANA reports need to present the case for any unapproved redelegation as per the applicable rule. Because as we said, as I said when we started this one, it's really unclear why it was redelegated. There's this litany of, or a grocery list of these things that were wrong, but we just seems to fail to make the point about what caused it. IANA reports should contain information that is relevant to the analysis of the redelegation request. And if the conviction or imprisonment of a delegee or its representatives for reasons that are not related to the operation or management of the CCTLD should be a factor in the analysis of the redelegation request, the rules should be updated to reflect this. .cx redelegation. Again, we've got the issue, what happens when there's no active admin contact and tech contact? Because there are no real rules that talk about that. And obviously, under those circumstances, in this case, given everything, it sort of made sense for the decision. But it just points out that this whole area needs some clarification. And that's the end of Section 2, and I'll be glad to take questions or comments.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, sorry, I thought that the whole call had dropped off.
No, it's just no questions by the look of it. And sorry, I've got a neighbour's burglar alarm ringing. So if my
keep out of his house, Keith.
Her house.
All right.
Sorry.
Let's get into the home stretch there. Issues, we bring back the fair and consistent application of bylaws applying to minutes of board meetings. Again, we've got the issue of some documentation missing here. Applicability of ICP-1, we bring up the case of the summer public consultation, the fact that it's not supported by the community, unilaterally imposed on the community. ICP-1 has access to the zone file. Does not mention IDM CCTLDs, should be updated in cooperation with the community, and we go through the litany of issues around those things. Inactive or retired manager or administrative contact that is not replaced. So IANA has no published rules or requirements defining what is an active CCTLD manager or administrative contact. Active CCTLD manager is defined here as a manager with whom IANA is regularly in contact with, at least once a year, I would imagine. IANA has no published rules or requirements defining how a CCTLD manager or admin contact can retire without being replaced. What is the status of a CCTLD where the manager or administrative contact is not active or has retired without being replaced?
Just a typo there. The manager, there's an A missing.
Okay, thank you, Patricio. So basically, that whole area, what happens, how can you define someone is retired, what happens when someone is de facto considered retired, and how do all the processes which say you need a CC manager or an admin contact happen, all that mapping is just not there. Failure to reply is an approval. There's no published rules for that, and I think that's really not fair play as far as I'm concerned. IANA process and procedures for unconsented and contested redelegation. Well, there's no processes, really. So that's kind of simple, but we try to lay out the case. Public IANA reports, we make the case that, from a historical perspective, they're inconsistent. And you need, I think there, part of the problem is there's no documented processes or procedures which say IANA should really clearly include certain things and clearly document them. And, you know, most of the time the IANA reports are great. Let's be honest here. This is where we find the information, or so we think, because they're different than from what's presented to the board, and we understand that. But, again, that's another conundrum. But, I mean, in the cases where they're not, is always the dicey cases, and that brings up questions. Application of GAC principles. Again, we've noticed the change. In 2005, the IANA reports under evaluation section have the following text, which relevance guidance is also provided by the GAC principles. So ever since the GAC principles were brought out, the IANA reports in their evaluation section or somewhere relevant like that have always really mentioned the GAC principles. In the 2010 version of the IANA reports, we have no more mention of the GAC principles. I guess they're covered in other informational memoranda, which is sort of odd. And there are some things about contested redelegations or unapproved redelegations which make a lot of sense in the GAC 2005 principles. And really, one would hope that those could be included somewhere in the process to evaluate those kinds of cases.
Just at that point, Martin has his hand up. Martin.
Thanks, Keith. Yes, I do. I think it's actually a bit more complicated than that, because until the point that the IANA reports cease to make reference to the GAC principles, they always made reference to the 2000 GAC principles. At various stages, Paul Toomey said, oh, that's a mistake. But it carried on referring to the 2000 principles even as late as the Delhi meeting in 2008. So I don't know whether it's actually relevant to put it in here, but in fact, where you're talking about reference to the GAC principles, they're not talking about the same GAC principles as the ones that are on the table now.
Thank you, Martin. The text I have in 371 is actually something that's copied directly from a 2005 IANA report where they don't mention which year, I don't think. I'll definitely look into that and adjust if necessary. Good comment.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's actually, it must have been a fluke that you found the one where they didn't actually say which one they referred to.
Yeah, I was trying to keep it simple at this point, but all right, I'll definitely look into that. Thank you. And
Can I add 2 cents to that?
Yeah, sure.
Well, so as the other party in all these discussions with Martin and so forth, the issue was raised by Martin with Paul, as I understand, and others that I think it was in the hyperlink. It wasn't explicitly mentioned. It was a particular version of the GAC principles, but it was hyperlinked to the old version. I think
part of the problem we had is the GAC website was changing every year, and the URL kept changing. So we weren't able to link to a stable version of the GAC principles. Secondly, because there was some ongoing lack of clarity as to which version of the GAC principles had been formally accepted by ICANN, whether they had been formally accepted by ICANN, and certainly that was an ongoing discussion at that time, we decided that given that this was the pro forma text that really is just trying to give a general overview of the evaluation procedure, it's not sort of normative text, so to speak, we just changed the reference to informational memoranda. It wasn't considered by us that change was an explicit break in practice from what we did previously. The evaluation was still performed the same. But in terms of the actual pro forma text that describes the general process, we just made that amendment. Does that make sense?
Thank you, Kim.
May I come?
Yes.
May I come back in on this, then, please? To my knowledge, if ICANN was in some doubt as to the status of the GAC principles through that period, it never came back to the GAC to ask or even to discuss them. But whenever it was raised, they always said, oh, yes, it's just a mistake.
At any rate, I think for me this very fact of the GAC principles is the point, and the second point is, I think Kim made it, is that, IANA reports do change, and we don't know. It just, next report comes out, and all of a sudden there's no language, and there's not necessarily any explanation given to the wide world out there. Maybe internally, and maybe the board knows, and maybe staff know. But to the world out there, all of a sudden, poof, there's new wording, there's new procedures, there's new processes, and no one knows why. And I think that's one of the problems that we have. Again, not that IANA does a bad job. It's just very frustrating for people how these changes come about, I think. Our last issue, 3.8, IANA versus applicable local law and legislation for CCTLD. IANA needs to clarify the impact of local laws and legislation in its evaluation of contested redelegation requests. Yeah, which takes us into the recommendation, and basically what we've got in this report is the carbon copy of the friendly redelegation report, which is essentially let's work out an interpretation framework, and if that doesn't work, then the DRDWG recommends to the CCNSO Council that they do a PDP if the framework thing doesn't work. And last week, I will note, since Eberhard is not here, Eberhard's final comment on this was that upon initial reading, he felt that there should be a recommendation for a PDP outright. And that's my walkthrough. Mr. Chair, over to you.
Oh, thank you, Bernie. Martin, is your hand up anew, or have you just forgotten to take it down?
My apologies, I forgot to take it down.
Oh, thank you. Okay, are there any comments overall about the document and its recommendation? No, nothing further. My feeling is that we have a little bit more work to do. I think the issue raised by Patricio on the transparency requirements when or regarding the board's reporting for an unsuccessful redelegation deserves a bit further work. And I think, Bernie, you just made the very important point that one of our working group members had felt at the first reading last week that a PDP was the logical conclusion. and not hearing any dissent from the current recommendation from those on the call, my feeling is that we do need to still work on this document before we make it public. So I think let's see if we can get some time in the face-to-face session in Cartagena to discuss the unresolved issues and continue with our work going forward on this document with a view to finalising it for the San Francisco ICANN meeting. I'll take silence as agreement with that as a path, as a roadmap for the way forward. And I think just...
Someone's trying to speak, I think, Keith.
Sorry?
I thought I heard someone trying to speak. Obviously not. Okay, sorry.
No, okay. It's probably the burglar alarm still going off in the background here.
Probably.
Yeah. So, and then I think we have then retirements, delegations and friendly redelegations report plus the third progress report to now publish, just with the minor changes that we've discussed on this call. I think there's the question of publishing and opening for public comments. And my view is that we, even though we're approaching Christmas and holidays for some, we still need a clear close-off date for comments once these documents are made public. And I'd like to suggest Friday the 14th of January being 6 weeks before the San Francisco ICANN meeting. So that this group can meet and discuss any comments raised during the public comments period. I don't think this is necessarily a full public comments period, and we should be opening a second public comments period after San Fran when we have our absolutely final report and recommendations. So just wondering how people feel about that as a time frame. Is everyone happy with that? So, Bart, can we progress to finalising the documents and getting them online as soon as possible with a public comment period closing 14 January?
Yes. So the issue will be that, say, over the next 2 days there will be Thanksgiving in the US, so the documents will be published, the reports themselves will be published either Monday or Tuesday. But say as soon as we finish the progress report, we will send it to this list, inform the GAC or through Suzanne, and inform the CCTLD community.
Excellent.
And announce this, say the full reports will be published by Monday or Tuesday, and they can be found on the CCNSO website.
Yep. Okay. Thanks, Bert. Okay. Is there any other business? Patricio.
Yeah. Hi. I just wanted to comment briefly on this framework of interpretation that I was not in the previous call, so I wasn't very aware of how it was being worded. I'm in favor of a two-step process, guidelines first and PDP if that fails. But seems to me that calling this a framework of interpretation is a bit of too much of a euphemism, and that framework of interpretation would imply that we are just interpreting things. But if we develop guidelines, I'm sure there will be some cases where our guidelines will run counter to current practice or policy. And it would be a bit of a stretch to say that that's an interpretation. We will be changing some of the rules. And so I was a bit more comfortable when we were calling that guidelines, meaning something that could be developed in a faster and more streamlined way than a full-fledged PDP, but not necessarily just an interpretation of current practice.
I think any change to the rules requires a PDP, though, is the issue, Patricio. We did discuss this on a couple of calls, and since we have this recommendation now approved in both the delegations and friendly redelegations report, it would be a bit tricky to change it for this report. But I wonder if that's something that you might raise during the comment period as an observation, and it is something we could reconsider on our way through towards our final report. Okay, anything else? If there's nothing else, our next meeting is face-to-face in Cartagena on the Thursday during the ICANN meeting, and it's scheduled for 11 a.m. for 1 hour. I'm thinking we probably have some discussion on this document as well as setting our timetable going forwards for future meetings. So, Christina, I wonder if we might ask for a bit more time for that meeting, whether it could be extended for a two-hour period. Could you please make inquiries to see if that was possible?
I can check.
Thank you very much. Okay, if there's nothing else, then I'll just thank you for your attendance and participation, and we'll see most of you, I guess, in Cartagena.
Excellent. Thanks, sir.
Thank you all. Goodbye.
Thank you.